to the 25, splits two men, now to his left at the 40, 45, and there he goes! Charles Woodson down the sideline! He's gonna go all the way! Touchdown, Michigan!
Hey, welcome back to Inside the Huddle. We are tickled pink, excited to welcome in our next guest. Hey, I had to do it a little bit. I said I was not going to be, but I had to do it a little bit. So excited to welcome in recent College Football Hall of Fame inductee, 1997 Heisman Trophy winner, national champion, future Pro Football Hall of Famer, all the accolades you could put on one shelf. I imagine he's probably going to have multiple shelves for it. But Charles Woodson, Charles, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, really appreciate it. I've got a special guest for you here today. Shelly Kovacs is with us.
Hi, buddy.
What's up, Shelly?
How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for joining us. And we want to talk about a couple of things here. These game my lives, but first I wanted to let you know, and when I was talking to the ESPN guys a little bit about this, like we did a poll recently. We're going to be doing a podcast about the top 50 athletes of the last 50 years across all sports, and no surprise to me, but Charles Woodson was ranked number one. We had 15 people vote in this poll, coaches, former coaches, members of the media, trainers, staff, everybody, and you are ranked number one. So congratulations on being ranked the number one athlete the last 50 years for all of Michigan sports.
Man, that's kind of crazy to hear you say that, man. I'm, certainly appreciative of, you know, all the votes and people who you know, think that way about me. And, man, that's incredible. You know, when I'm sitting here thinking about, you know, playing in 95 to 97, you know, you think about playing in that moment, you know, trying to be, you know, gaining respect to your teammates and, you know, you're trying to win games, trying to get to a bowl game, trying to win a championship. You're living in that moment, man. You're not necessarily thinking about things that will happen 20 years down the road. So, I mean, I'm certainly humbled, you know, at the fact that I was voted number one.
Well, Charles, in that same vein, recently elected in December, you were enshrined in the College Football Hall of Fame. What was that honor like for you? And is there at least a little part of you that allows yourself to think like, okay, I'm going to see how this goes because chances are down the road here, I'm a member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Well, I think for me, it's one of those things where you don't look too far down the road. You know, you certainly, you know, being voted to the College Football Hall of Fame, you respect what that means. And, again, you kind of live in that moment. You know, you start, you know, going over in your mind, you know, the different memories and the journey that you've gone through to get to, you know, a certain point. You play well enough to gain some recognition by your play. And so, you know, being inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame was certainly, you know, one of the, you know, greatest moments in my life. And I share that, you know, with my teammates because you don't, you know, a lot of these things they don't come about unless you play on a great team and you can get recognition for what your team has done as well. So I'm not looking down the road to, you know, what may happen with the NFL. I just enjoy the moment and being a College Football Hall of Famer.
Do you know, I think that really epitomizes one of the reasons that you have been able to have such a successful career is because more so than anybody I can think of, you have always been able to live in the moment. And that is, you know, I think that's how you're wired, but that's not something you can teach somebody who's not that way. And that's enabled you to maintain, you know, not only the focus of where you are, but to really appreciate, you know, where you are in that moment. I think that, you know, it's funny, I never thought about it till I really heard you, you know, talk about it just now. But I think that explains a lot of why you've been able to reach, you know, such a high level each phase of your life. It's because you've really been able to capitalize on being in the moment.
Yeah, I think that's important, you know, for anyone, you know, not to, you know, get ahead of themselves. You know, you just mentioned, Michael mentioned, you know, Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know, it'd be you know, for a player like myself, it would be easy to be looking forward to, oh, man, one day, you know, I might be in a Pro Football Hall of Fame. But, you know, that was not the focus. The focus was trying to be the best player on the field, or being the best player in the country, or, you know, trying to make the Pro Bowl that season, or you know, trying to, you know, get to the playoffs or whatnot. You know, you tried to live in that moment and focus on the task at hand at that particular year. And if you're able to do that year after year, and you're able to stay healthy throughout it, somewhat healthy.
Yeah. minus a few years here or there, right?
Right. Then you can reach some of those plateaus. So I think it is very important to be able to focus on the moment and the task at hand. And, you know, at some point, you know, sometimes the hard work pays off. And, you know, it's paid off on a few different instances for me. So I'm very, very blessed.
Charles, you know, we're gonna go back and look at the start of your career in a second here. But as you're talking about, you know, the obviously great player in high school, great player in college, win a Heisman Trophy, win a national championship, go on to the NFL, win Super Bowl, have a, you know, NFL Rookie of the Year. Now you're in your second part of your career as a TV analyst for the NFL. I mean, has there ever been anything that you didn't succeed at?
Probably nothing that I would tell you.
I won't say anything either.
I want to keep that thought alive that I haven't failed it. That's a great way to be looked at. So I like that.
Charles, so take us back to being a high school kid, Fremont, Ohio. Obviously, the tradition out of Fremont. Some great players have come from there, out of, you know, for Michigan. And so how did you end up at Michigan as opposed to Ohio State? Well, I always like to go back there and start there with a player's career. Like, who recruited you? You know, what was that visit like? I mean, because you were actually, Lloyd took over your freshman year, but you were recruited by Gary Moeller to play for his team.
Yeah. I grew up in Northwest Ohio, Fremont, Ohio. You know, where I'm from, you know, is really, you know, distance-wise, you know, it's really pretty even, you know, between Columbus and Ann Arbor. So I think, you know, in the part of the country where I lived, it's pretty split as far as who you like, you know, Michigan or Ohio State. So we had a pretty good amount of Wolverine fans where I'm from. But for me, most importantly, the one Michigan fan that was, you know, my idol as a young kid growing up was my older brother, Terry Carter. And, you know, he was, you know, a star athlete in our hometown as well. And he was the first person that I really got to lay eyes on as an athlete, you know, that I looked up to. And he was a Michigan fan. And, you know, just by proximity, you know, because my older brother, my idol, was a Michigan fan, I was a Michigan fan. And, you know, so it started very early for me. And so I was always, you know, in the back of my mind, if I had an opportunity to go to school, you know, my first choice from a young child was Michigan. And so it just so happened that I was able to have a great high school career and got recruited by Michigan. And like you said, Coach Moeller was the head coach at the time. And, you know, Lloyd Carr was a recruiter, you know, on the trail. He was recruiting me and, you know, visited with the defensive backs coach at the time. And then once Lloyd took over, then it was Jim Herman's call, you know, to be the main recruiter at that time. And so, you know, that was around the time that I made this decision, because in high school I was an offensive player mainly. You know, I was, you know, Mr. Football in Ohio mainly because of what I did on offense. But, of course, I played defense as well. But I used to bang my knees up pretty good and decided, you know, that I was going to play defense when I went to college. And I remember, you know, Coach Herman being very excited about the fact that I was going to be on the defensive side of the ball. And so, you know, that's kind of how it turned out.
Well, it's funny you bring that story up, because we've had Tripp Wellborn on the show before, and Tripp tells a great story about wanting to play offense and showing up one day and his locker was moved to the defensive side of the ball. And he eventually went on to become a two-time All-American safety at Michigan. But I'd always wondered how you know, why we weren't talking about Charles Woodson, Heisman Trophy winner, as a running back. And so I didn't know that you're the beating you were taking. But obviously, Charles, even though you decided you wanted to play defense, offense was still part of your blood because you went back to it in your sophomore year.
Yeah, I was a football player, man. I mean, that's what I was at heart. You know, I never necessarily looked at myself as an offensive player or a defensive player, a special team. I just liked football. And you know, where I grew up, you know, you didn't have enough players to be having an offensive team and a defensive team. You played, you know, like most small towns, you had to play everything. And so that's just kind of how I looked at myself. And like I said, when I was in college a couple of times, in high school, I banged my knee up a couple of times playing running back, and my knee would swell up, and I would have to get my knee drained before a game. And I just didn't like that experience. And I said, man, if I associate this pain with playing running back, I'm going to the defensive side of the ball. So that's kind of how I ended up on defense. And, you know, basically the rest is history.
Yeah, I would say it was probably a smart career move for you, Charles. So, you know, yesterday we were getting ready for this interview and we asked a little bit of a trivia question. I wonder, Charles, how well you know your own personal trivia. You scored your first career touchdown on a reverse. Do you remember who you scored it against?
My first career touchdown on a reverse? It was my first touchdown?
It was your first touchdown at Michigan, yep.
Indiana?
It was Indiana in 1996, yes. Yeah. So you would have gotten your own trivia question correct. So well done.
There you go. Got it.
Yeah, as we said.
It took me a minute, but I got it.
Yeah, succeeds at everything he does. As one of my colleagues point out, too, also has a successful wine winery, so it makes good wine. So, yeah, we'll have to find something maybe someday. Charles, your freshman year, and Shelly was telling a story earlier about you guys at the Sheridan Hotel and coming across and finding you as a little bit of a loner. I'm surprised to hear that. Like, I remember Charles Woodson from – 97 and 96 and as being that guy that everybody rallied around. And so does that sound familiar? Were you were a little bit isolated, or did you isolate yourself when you first got to Michigan?
Yeah, I think I came in, not necessarily a loner, but I would say that I kept to myself for the most part.
Right.
Like I had, I had a small group of people that I talked to. You know, I wasn't the type of, you wouldn't say that I was the most outgoing person as far as trying to meet people, you know. So I was always, you know, growing up, it was always, you know, people that, you know, wanted to meet myself, you know, hey, this is Charles Woodson, da 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 da. So as a result of that, I kind of was reserved as far as, you know, meeting new people. I felt like I knew enough people, you know.
Yeah.
So in my certain circle of friends, I kind of stayed to that or by myself. And I'm still kind of that way, you know, for the most part. You know, it takes me a while, a lot of times to, you know, get close with people. I'm always, you know, watching and observing, you know, and kind of keeping to myself for the most part until I feel, you know, I can trust the person or that person is good to be around or whatever it is. So, yeah, I would say that's accurate.
Shelly, I would ask you, since, I mean, you've had so many great interactions, but there is something about a man, a woman, a student that you gravitate towards. Like, what stood out to you about Charles that you said, all right, this is someone that I'm going to really invest my time, my resources into?
You know, I hope that it's the other way around. You know, I hope that all of my students always felt that I felt that way, and that the ones that I ended up, you know, really developing relationships, you know, long-term relationships with are the ones that say, this person really cares about me. This is somebody I can trust. You know, this is somebody that I want to invest in.
I think that would be true.
I think with Charles, I think part of it is that I understood, you know, as I said, the story that I told before we went on the air, Charles, was about, and I don't know if you remember this, it was your freshman year, and when I went down to the Sheraton after, you know, like during the lunch break of 2 days to do some academic work with kids, and everybody typically ate lunch and then went for their nap. And when you walked in, it was, you probably took a little nap before or just, you know, had some time in your room, and you walked in when they were even packing up the lunch, and you were sitting at a table starting to eat your lunch, and everybody else had gone, and it was just the two of us sitting in that big ballroom at the Sheraton. Do you remember that?
No, I don't specifically, no.
Yeah, but, you know, that's kind of, you know, what I was talking about. And you hit it right on, you know, right on the head that it's more that, you know, not, you know, really having a sense of who it is that you want to invest in and, you know, kind of protecting your inner circle because, you know, as a high-profile person, any high-profile person in any area, you know, there are always so many people who want a piece of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that just as much as Charles does. So, not quite. Charles, your freshman year, did you know you were going to start right away? I mean, take me through that freshman year. It culminates with the great game against Ohio State, where, you know, I think obviously Tamunga, Biakwetuka, and that offensive line. Gets so much credit for 1995, but you had a terrific game shutting down Terry Glenn, had two interceptions in the game. So take me a little bit through, like, your freshman year, the experience of getting an opportunity and then kind of, like, already starting to create a little bit of the Charles Woodson legacy took place as a freshman.
Yeah, well, when I came in, of course, I came in wanting to start. And, you know, you're highly recruited, and, you know, that's kind of the expectation is that you'll start. You'll be the guy day one. But it's funny, you know, that when I got to, you know, the first, you know, time we're getting ready to line up and go to practice, and you look on the depth chart, there's like six or seven people in front of you, and like, where did all these people come from? I don't remember all these guys on the visit. I don't remember, you know, seeing this many defensive backs on the team. Like, how in the world am I six on the depth chart? So, you know, immediately, you know, your mind is, man, I got some work to do in order to make my mark, because there's a lot of guys in front of me. And so that's what I proceeded to do. You know, my initial thought was, man, I got to be starting. So I got to turn the heads of all the coaches and all of the players, and I got to gain the respect. And slowly but surely, I moved up to the third corner. There was in front of me was Tyrone Noble and Clarence Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
They were the starters at corner. They were the starters day one. And, you know, I was the third corner, and we get to the first game against Virginia, I believe it was. You guys remember that comeback game?
Yep, absolutely.
And I'm on the sideline, and I'm like, man, I cannot believe, you know, that I'm not starting in this game. And so what ended up happening is Tyrone Noble got hurt. He came out. So I went in for a few plays. He got well, and then he came back in. And then Clarence Thompson got hurt. He came out, and I went in. And so then, or either was one way or the other, I ended up finishing the game because one of those guys was out. And then it would have been Noble, because then Noble didn't start the second week of the season. And so then I started the second week, I believe, against Illinois. And so then I remember after that game walking out to practice, and Vance Bedford was the defensive back coach. I said, hey, coach, am I still starting this week? And so this would have been going into the third week.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yep, you're still the starter. I said, there it is. There's no looking back. This is my opportunity. I'll never give up this position again. And so then I started from then on. And, you know, just through, you know, experience of being out there on the field, you know, you continue to get better and better and better. And, you know, you put together a nice little freshman campaign. And then, you know, the big moment, of course, is the last game of the season against Ohio State. We had lost a couple of games, you know, and hadn't played up to our potential. But we knew we had that game, you know, to salvage our season. And, of course, I'm from Ohio. I mean, you got to beat Ohio State, you know, so – went into that game focused, knowing I was going to be playing against, you know, the best receiver, you know, probably in the country at that time. They had a great offense with Eddie George and Orlando Pace, and I mean, they were stacked. But we went in there focused, and you know, as a young freshman, they would have come up with a couple of big plays in that game to help seal the game. And of course, you know about Biakwetuka in the game that he had, incredible game. But Yeah, man. Came in not knowing what was going to happen because of the depth chart, and ended up starting the rest of the way after that first game.
Charles, when speaking of Bjarke Batuka, you know, you obviously, after you come off the field in a series, you're talking to your defensive coaches and you're focusing on, like, what do we have to do the next time we're out there? But to be on that team and to be a freshman, maybe a little bit, and I mean, were you in awe? Were you standing up and, like, watching what he was doing? Did you have any idea that he was rushing for 300 yards in that game?
Oh, man, we were all cheerleaders. Ain't no question about it. It's hard not to, you know, stand up and watch, because, I mean, it's 106,000 people in the stadium. Every time he rips off a 14, 15-yard run, people are on their feet. And, I mean, it started from the first play of the game. I mean, he was just ripping off chunk after chunk. So, of course, we go out there and we make our stops that we need to make. But when we get to the sideline, we're all looking at each other like, man, this is one of those days. And it never let up. That offensive line continued to just grind and grind and grind that Ohio State team. And they from the get-go, from the jump, you know, they could never recover. And, you know, we just continued to dominate on our end. And, of course, it came down to a last play in order to seal it. And, you know, I was able to get an interception. But, man, we were all fans that day of what Tamonga was doing.
Yeah, I was sitting in the crowd. I remember when they announced the number and just thinking, like, my God, like, we've just – everybody that was at that game and had been watching on TV had just seen something unique that they – that at least in Michigan football history has only happened one other time, with a 300-yard rushing performance. So, Charles, you mentioned, you know, that a little bit of like, hey, I got to get in there, I got to start. And we were talking about this before you came on. All this talk during college football nowadays is about this transfer portal and guys can leave. And that 1995 freshman class, in addition to yourself, included James Hall and Ty Streets and Dadrian Taylor and Clarence Williams and some guy named Tom Brady, too. Do you ever think, I mean, if the transfer portal had existed like it does now, would you have ever thought about it? Would Tom, I mean, he obviously started later in his career, but would he have left Michigan? I mean, we think about the great players, but how much it would have impacted guys back then if this was so easily accessible as it is nowadays?
For myself, you know, there was only one instance where I thought about, you know, transferring, and that was because of an incident that has, you know, been noted about me and Coach Carr getting into, you know, an argument one time during the season before the Ohio State game. But I spoke it out and I said it. I don't know how serious I really was, but I don't think I would have left Michigan. Now, speaking for Brady, I think coming in as a freshman, you know, knowing that he was behind Greasy, I don't think he would have left initially. Now, I think once Drew Henson came along, and that was the whole split quarterback thing happened, I think he may have at that point in time. But as far as coming in as freshman, I don't think he would have thought right off the bat, you know, I'm leaving because these guys are playing and I should be playing. I think he would have tried to work his way to the top and then be the quarterback of the team. I think it probably would have shook out that way.
Yeah, and it's just an interesting conversation point in today's college football because, again, before you came on, we were talking about the 97 National Championship team, which I would like to get into next in that season, and the culture that you guys had to build, the battles you guys have been through together, your whole class, and how many of those guys from that class, Josh Williams and James Hall, like I said, and Steve Frazier and Rob Reines, all these guys, Aaron Shea, that had been through those battles together and became such a strong unit, such a strong class, and was so instrumental to the success of that 97 team, and just the transfer portal and guys can leave after this and the whole thing, and how much harder it is to build that culture of family and togetherness because of how easy it is to just pack up and go somewhere else nowadays.
Well, what's interesting is that every time you walk out and go to practice, you know, you see that sign above the door that said those who stay will be champions. And you read it, you know, every time you walk out to practice. And, you know, I don't think any of us really quite understood what it meant. You know, it sounded good. You know, those who stay will be champions. Hey, that's great. What does that mean? But I think when you get to that point where you're in Pasadena, mm-hmm. and you got a chance to play for the national championship, that's when things start to set in, you know. And then after that game, and like you said, you mentioned all the guys on that team, and you mentioned, you know, the guys ever think about transferring. I mean, we all probably thought about transferring at some point. How serious we were, I don't know. But then at that moment, you know, when you're hosting up the you know, you're a Rose Bowl champion and a national championship, national champion, all of a sudden you think about the many times that you walked out to practice and you looked up at that sign and it says, "Those who stay will mm-hmm. be champions." Now it all of a sudden means something, you know. So, you know, that was, of course, you know, that 97 team, like you said, we came in together. We went through the ups and downs. And to me, I think the biggest thing we fed off of, I tell people all the time, is that after 95 and 96, you know, when people started saying the M in Michigan is still for mediocre, mm-hmm. that was like the breaking point. You know, that was the most disrespectful thing that I think any of us could hear, and especially for myself. And I felt like, man, I'm too good of a player for anybody to consider me as mediocre. Mm-hmm. And you know, our team took that to heart, and we took that, you know, with us through that entire season.
Charles, with that 97 season, and there are so many great memories from it, and I was asking some of our listeners earlier, you know, what is that moment, what is that game that stood out to you? And I think that was my senior year in high school, so I'm only a couple years younger than you, but it was my senior year in high school, and I can go back and live through, like, every single game, and I went to most of the games, and, you know, the Colorado game, they were the hyped team, and you guys just absolutely crushed them, and you had an interception in the Baylor game. If we're talking about Charles Woodson moments, it's the, you know, the tackle for loss early on where you, like, lit that guy up behind the backfield, and you go forward here, and you've got the Northwestern game. And we've heard great stories from, you know, I've heard stories from Eric Mays and Aaron Shea and Jeremy Tooman about the Iowa game and the comeback that you had. And was there a moment before we get to, like, Ohio State, was there a moment during that season where it started to feel like, okay, I mean, we've got something really special, and I think there's a possibility we're going to win this whole thing?
I think there's two games that come to mind, and you really mentioned both of them. First of all, it was the first game of the season against Colorado. They were very highly ranked, and again, you know, we're coming in being looked at as mediocre Michigan, and you know, I just remember leading up to that first game, our offseason and our preseason, I think the work that we put in and the determination that we had every day set us up for that successful season. But going into Colorado, beating the top-ranked team and playing the way that you thought you should play, I thought that kicked it off. And then the Iowa game. Mm-hmm. You know, going down, we had to, you know, Tim DeWight had the punt returns, and they jumped up on us. And it seemed like it was getting out of hand. But I think if you talk to anyone who's won a championship or been on a championship team, they'll tell you there are moments that, you know, to the outside world, it looks devastating. But to the people on the sideline, nobody was really worried. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't see anybody that was really shook on the sideline. Of course, you look up at the scoreboard and it's lopsided. But we knew we were the better team. You know, we just had to go out and execute. And, you know, being that we came out and you know, the plays that Greasy made, scrambling and getting the ball to Tooman, and, you know, some of those big plays that ended up happening, and then we win that game, that's when, you know, we said to ourselves, you know what, we got something special here. You know, because in previous years, you know, like against Northwestern or Purdue, you know, you lost some of those games that you should win. And this was a game that we felt like we should win, and we got down, but we never lost focus in what we were doing, what we could do, and then we went out and finished the game. And so those two games, to me, stand out as the times where our team, we had one where we dominated, and then we had one where we were down and we had to come back. That was the season right there for us.
We've got a few more minutes here with former Michigan, well, I mean, again, no introduction, Charles Woodson. We've got a few more minutes here with Charles Woodson. Charles, I want to ask you about a couple of specific moments that stand out. I think when Michigan fans think about your career, they go to a couple of different places. They go to Ohio State game. They go to the Michigan State game. So a couple, if you will humor me, a couple of specific plays, I wonder if you could tell us about it. First one, if we're going to go back before the Ohio State game, the interception against Michigan State. When you went back and watched the film, do you look and go, like, how did I get my toe down on that play?
No, man, I'm a natural, man. That was supposed to happen like that. But, you know, it's funny as I was talking to somebody else about it. You know, I remember, you know, running, you know, with the receiver across the field. And, you know, the State's quarterback was scrambling to his right. And I remember during the play saying to myself, man, if he tries to throw it away, if he puts it where I can get it, man, I'm going to try to get up and get this ball. And so it just so happens he let it go. And I'm thinking, well, hey, I can get that. So, I jump up, you know, and, of course, you know, grab it with the one hand and, you know, get the toe down. And when I jump up, I mean, I knew what that play was.
Yeah.
Just put it that way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Well, when I jumped up and I kind of, you know, jumped up, stuck my chest out, I knew exactly at that moment what that play meant. And you know, looking back at the play, I'm not so sure if he was trying to throw it away. I know there was a guy behind me that I believe Marcus Ray was hit and drove out of bounds. Yeah, he might have been trying to get it to that guy, so maybe that's why he put it where I could get it. But I'm glad he did, because that was definitely a signature moment in my collegiate career.
Yeah, it certainly was, and I'm sure, I mean, remembering back, I think it got replayed over and over again, and probably there's a lot of moments, but probably one of those moments that helped lead to the Heisman Trophy. All right, Charles, let's fast forward to the Ohio State game. Before we get to that punt return, there's actually early on in that game, you and David Boston going at it, you actually ripping your helmet off, and, you know, that to me is like one of those moments where, you know, here's this guy, David Boston, who's trying to maybe say, like, this, hey, we're not backing down. We're going to end this losing streak to you guys. What do you remember from that play? And was it as heated as it appeared to be on television or what we saw of it?
Yeah, it definitely was. You know, we have been talking back and forth in the media. Well, first, let me back up. In today's game, we both would have been kicked out. You know, so let's get that across. So I'm glad we were playing back in that time and not now, because we both probably wouldn't have been able to finish the game. But I remember, you know, jamming him at the line of scrimmage and driving him out of bounds, and their quarterback was scrambling. And so as he scrambled, you know, David turns to block me. And at first, you know, I just took it as him blocking me. You know, of course, he was pretty aggressive. He's a big dude. I mean, he was huge.
Mm-hmm.
So he's blocking me at first, but then he kept on pushing towards my face. And so at that moment, I'm like, holy, this dude is fighting me. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden we're going back and forth, and, you know, I got one last little left in, and then took my helmet off, you know, as to say, man, if this is how you want it, man, it's all good with me, you know? And so that kind of, you know, really set the tone for the rest of the game. But that's what, you know, to me, that embodied what the rivalry was all about, you know, so we, you know, we went on, of course, you know, for the rest of that particular quarter. And then, like you said, you know, we get to the punt return you're talking about.
Yeah, the punt return. And, you know, the interesting thing about it that I think a lot of people, you know, look back on your career and talk about is, I mean, you hadn't had a punt return for a touchdown at Michigan at that point. And you had been returning punts, but that was the you know, your number one, your best punt return of your career. Previous to that was a 31-yarder against Alabama. And so it wasn't something that, I mean, it was something that you did consistently in 97. But, I mean, you hadn't had that breakthrough signature moment. So how does it, and everybody that I've talked to that has played with you has said, when Charles knew that we needed to have it, he just made it happen. Is it that easy that you just made it, you willed it to happen?
Well, I mean, I wish it were that easy. but that's why when you have, like I said, when you have a great team, you know, these things happen. Because if you watch that play and you watch the blocks that transpired during that play, it was picture perfect. It was almost as if you were writing a movie and you were telling each player what they need to do at the specific point in time in that movie, you know, so that everything lines up correctly. And when I caught the ball and started off left, I mean, everything just opened up. You know, all 10 guys on the football field on my team got the perfect block. And so it was just a lane for me. I just had to use vision and get through it and then get to the sideline and get up the field. But, you know, when you talk about myself and coming up with a play, I was able to come up with a play because 10 of the guys said, we need to make a play as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there it is, man. That was, of course, you know, one of the biggest moments in my life.
Charles, you after that game was over with, you have the everybody remembers the rose that you put in your mouth. Where did the rose come from? Do you know?
I have no clue where that rose from. I really don't. I don't know who gave it to me. I just remember putting it in my mouth and just smiling at the crowd. I don't have no clue where it came from.
Shelly, what do you remember about that? Because I mean, I was in the game, sitting in section 18. Row 17. Normally, after when a game ends, as soon as it ends, my dad is like, book it out of there, right? We got to beat traffic, got to beat traffic. And in that moment, he was just like, let's just sit here for a while.
Yeah,
let's just sit here, take it all in. I think he was going out in the parking lot looking for a rose that he could put in his mouth. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, I mean, that was that moment. I think if we could go back and see what happened at the stadium at that moment, I think everybody, you know, felt the same way. Nobody wanted to leave. Everybody wanted to savor it. You know, that iconic picture of you with the rose in your mouth, you know, the guy who took that, his father is a member of the M Club of Greater Detroit. Mm. At one point I sat on the board with him. And he likes to always talk about how, you know, that famous picture of Charles with the rose. My son took that picture.
Wow. Yeah, that is pretty cool. Charles, real quick on the, because I know that we've taken a lot of your time here this morning. You've got prep work you're doing for the NFL playoffs this weekend. But, you know, I was telling the story before it came on. I went to the 98 Rose Bowl with my older brother who passed away a couple months after that. And we had great seats and we loved the game. But one play that gets talked about, but I've never heard an explanation. You guys are leading. It's late. Ryan Leaf is trying to engineer a comeback. And it looks like you're in a perfect position to intercept his desperation heave. And then the next thing we know, you're on the ground getting pushed in the back. How is it not offensive pass interference?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened. I have no clue because, you know, I remember going back and looking over that film and watching the referee pull the flag.
Yeah,
he was pulling the flag, and then all of a sudden he puts it back in his pocket. So it's almost like one of those Buffalo Wild Wings commercials where somebody hit a button and said, no, we want this game to go on a little bit longer. And so he put the flag back in his pocket. And I just remember being so blatant, and I'm thinking to myself, man, that was the seal of the game. That's the second interception of the game. This game's supposed to be over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in those situations, man, something bad always happens after those type of plays, you know. So I'm thinking, oh, my God. I mean, this just got them down to, I think it had to be maybe the 45 yards on our side of the field or something.
Yeah, I think so.
Like that. So I'm like, man, they're in striking distance, you know. So that was that always sticks out of my head as a point in the game that could have been disastrous and gone the other way, you know, as far as the end of that game. But, you know, fortunately, we were able to hold tight and the clock ran out on them. So history was made.
History was made. 1997 national champions. I'm going to ask this of Shelly, and I'm going to ask it of you, Charles. But so many great memories. We've covered the spectrum here, and we could probably have you on the show for 3 hours, but we won't obviously do that to you. But Shelly, when you look at Charles and the type of person you know him to be and everything that he's done off the field in addition to on the field, what is the Charles Woodson legacy that he continues? And one of the things that's really cool is that it hasn't ended, right, that it continues on here.
Wow. It's funny you asked that because I was thinking about it this morning. I was sitting with John Bacon and Jim Betts yesterday, and we were having a conversation. We were just having coffee, and we were having a conversation about what, you know, kind of the mantra of the Michigan man and how it evolved and what it really meant. And I use Charles as an example. I don't mean to talk about you not like you're not here, Charles. Yesterday when we were having that discussion, you know, you were on my mind about the interview today, and I said, you know, the most classic, you know, visible epitome of an example I can give you is Charles, not because of any one thing that you did, but because of all the things you did. And in my mind, it's as much about, you know, the academic scholarships, the, you know, the day that you and I went to go visit, you know, Jerome Grant in the hospital together, and the, you know, the things that for me, you know, and I obviously know a lot more of those things than the general public knows, but I think it's, you know, the compilation of the fact that you used, you know, football was football, it was a platform for you, but you always, it enabled you to, you know, become the person that you are, you know, today. I have to give a shout out to your mom, because I know, you know, Charles has always been very close to his mom, and she was a big influence, you know, and at the time that we did the initial scholarship, you know, we also did one in honor of his mom. And, you know, I think that it's just really been, you know, it just warms my heart. I mean, I don't know how else to say it, mm-hmm. but I think, you know, for me, it definitely is all of the things that you've done and the way that you've found, you know, passion, not to use an overused word, but, you know, the way that you've been able to leave a legacy, not just at the University of Michigan, but in the life that you lead and the things that you do all the time.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Shelley.
Yeah, Charles, I wonder if, I mean, if you could, you know, and it's an impossible question, but maybe it'll prepare you for that Pro Football Hall of Fame speech in a couple of years. But when you look back on your career, we spend so much time just looking at Michigan because we're a show here in Ann Arbor. But when you look back on your entirety of your career and then also the impact that you've made, what just, I mean, it's a hard question to answer, but like, what do you think your own personal legacy or more, maybe more appropriate, how do you want people to think of Charles Woodson, both as a football player and as a guy off the field?
You got to try to hear my dog in the background. Let me try to quiet him down. You know, for me, I think it's very simple. I think as a football player, I think I just want to be remembered as somebody that left it, that always left it out on the field. You know, I want you to, when you think about my career and you watch me play the game of football, you know, I don't think there's anybody that could ever think of me playing and say, man, he wasn't giving it all that he had. You know, I think Charles, you know, kind of relaxed on that play, you know, so, and if you did, it's got to be less than a handful of times if you ever thought that. So, and I just want people to know that I love the game, and I left it all out there. And I think as a person, you know, I just want you to look at me as somebody that did the best that they could. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the circumstances was, I mean, you know, I've made my mistakes. I've had my ups and downs. But just know that, you know what, I was trying to do the best I could, and I'm trying to get better. And that's all you can do in life.
Absolutely. Well, Charles, thank you so very, very much for joining us here today on Inside the Huddle, talking about the game of your life, your entire experience, being ranked the number one athlete in the last 50 years. And we'll be tuning in and watching you on Sunday as you break down the NFL playoffs, and certainly an intriguing matchup this weekend. And do you have to put your, you know, take your bias hat off a little bit? I mean, do you find yourself cheering for your former teammate there when the Patriots are playing?
I'm always cheering for him. You know, you got to be an analyst, and you got to try to break it down honestly. But I'm always pulling for Tom. I mean, you know, we're still good friends to this day. But man, it's going to be a tough matchup going into Arrowhead. you know. So I'm looking forward to the games this weekend. You know, a couple of matches that are reoccurring matches, because they both games have been played already this season. One time in New Orleans, they'll go back to New Orleans, but this time, you know, Brady's got to go on the road to Kansas City, so that makes it a little more interesting. Mm-hmm. But I'm certainly looking forward to these weekend's matchups, man. This is what the football is all about.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And we hope that we'll see you again. I know that you come back for a lot of Michigan games, and hopefully next year we're talking about a Big Ten title and a victory over Ohio State for this Michigan program.
That's the only thing we should be talking about. We got to get back. We got to do it. So this is the year. Let's claim it on this show right now. We'll be talking about Big Ten championship and college football playoffs next season.
Well, Charles, I'll say this, and I don't want to, you know, I know we, you know, didn't have you on for to talk about this, but I'll say this, is that it's the only thing for me now. I mean, when we can talk about 10 games that you've won and beating Michigan State, the whole thing. But for me, it's literally the only thing I care about is beating Ohio State and winning a Big Ten title right now.
I think me and you, we're not the only ones in that boat. You know, that boat might be getting a little lopsided right now. And, you know, we might have to get a bigger boat. But we're in the same. We have the same thought process as it pertains, especially to beating Ohio State, and of course the Big Ten championship. Those are the two most important things right now. Again, like you said, 10 wins is fantastic, but if you're not beating the Scarlet and Gray, you haven't done anything. So we got to get back to that.
All right, great stuff, Charles. Thank you so very much. Really appreciate it. Thanks to Shelly Kovacs for sharing some stories. She's going to hang around a little bit, share some more stories too.
Charles, great to be on the phone with you, and I hope to see you soon, buddy.
It sounds great. Thank you, guys, man. I really appreciate it. And to all the listeners and everybody paying attention, I certainly appreciate all of the love over the years. And you know, it's always Go Blue.
All right. Thanks, Charles. When we come back, we will hear some stories from Shelly. We've also got Nate from Wolverine Brewing Company here. Plus, we'll get into what's happened the last 24 hours. College basketball, Michigan State, Nebraska. We're also going to talk more about a little bit of the transfer portal, whatever. And what did Josh Gattis say that's got Michigan fans fired up? This is Inside the Huddle on Sports Talk 1050, WTK Ticket.